The motorcycle. When you want to hurry something, that means you no longer care about it and want to get on to other things. Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. South Texas is a subtropical zone, meaning in the summer it can get even hotter than Arizona because of the humidity, since the ocean is only a few hours away. One year, because my dad lives down there, we decided to visit, say hi, and see how things were going. Now, my dad's been riding motorcycles for a long time, dating back to the 70s. In his hometown of New Bern, North Carolina, he was known for riding too fast and being able to evade the police when they gave chase. Eventually, he grew out of his Kawasaki and found his way into a nice collection of Harley-David motorcycles that he bought over the years. During one visit, I tried to convince him to give me one to take home, but he couldn't be swayed. So I left it alone. On our next visit, after we moved to South Dakota, we were sitting in his shop. Looking around, he decided on gifting me an older, broken-down 1992 Honda Shadow 600. We were able to get it started, but the bike was making some iffy noises that sounded kind of like puking. Something was clearly very wrong with it, but I decided to try and take on the challenge of fixing the old motorcycle. So, with the bike in a trailer, we hauled it back to South Dakota with us, where it sat for some time before I was able to begin working on it. The following year, I found a free PDF Honda manual online and finally began to dig into the project, starting with stripping the bike down to its bare bones, removing the electrical system, the chain, the wheels, the forks, the gas tank, and eventually the motor. The project, over the years, has been moved all over the house, but it started with building a workbench in our back hallway so I would have a good place to start tearing down the motor safely and cleanly. As I did so, I put every little part into its own labeled container, making sure I wouldn't lose a single piece for when I eventually put the motor back together. I couldn't wait to take that first cherished ride. Then, I tore down the heads, exposing the pistons where I found one of the first major problems with the motor. The back piston was caked in carbon and cracked. So, after some saving, I was able to have the cylinders machined at Clouser Machine here in Spearfish, a local machine shop. Then I ordered new piston rings and pistons and gaskets from Rice's Spearfish Canyon Motors, or Outdoor Motorsports as it was called at the time. When the parts arrived, they sat for a few months before I had the chance to start building the motor. When the opportunity did arise for me to start putting the engine back together, I brought the family along as I studied the manual in more detail, learning all the intricacies of an internal combustion engine and sharing what I learned with the family as a whole as I went. Once I managed to get the rings installed, I realized I didn't have a piston ring compression tool. So after some creative brainstorming, I made one from a plastic bin lid. And after some fiddling, I was able to get the pistons back inside the lower cylinders. Along the way, I discovered a few missing bolts, ordered them, and torqued the heads back on to specification. I attached the timing chain and gear and adjusted the valves before replacing the covers. All the parts were covered with assembly lube, all the gasket sealing surfaces were cleaned to a polish, and all the bolts were tightened according to the manual. Finally, after months of disassembling, ordering parts, waiting, ordering more parts, more waiting, and reassembling, the motor was ready to turn over. So, with it set up on some boxes in our living room, I made a wiring harness and hooked the battery to a toggle switch. Then I bypassed the starter solenoid. With sparks flying and the fire extinguisher on standby, the engine came to life with a loud cough and puff of smoke. This was a major milestone in getting the bike back together and getting to the point where it would be rideable. Having a real motor fire up in our workshop was a vivid capstone in the internal combustion engine of our home school. We will never forget that moment. Now that we knew the motor was somewhat working, it was time to dig into the carbs. But in the world of motorcycling, Honda doesn't command the same kind of respect among the hardcore advocates as Indian or Harley-Davidson. And luckily, after some searching on the internet, I found a small shop out in California that specialized in production of Honda aftermarket parts. As I imagined what the bike would look and sound like, I knew that I wanted something extra special in the fuel management parts of the bike. So, I ordered new specialty jets and velocity stacks for the two carbs. These parts allow more fuel to get to the engine, raising its efficiency and boosting overall speed and performance. It wasn't until I dug into the carburetors that I started putting the pieces together about what really happened to this bike and how it got into such a state of disrepair. The washer that regulated the flow of fuel was missing in the rear carb, causing gas to flood the rear cylinder. Having too much gas in the motor is not a good thing. It breaks down the oil and increases the heat coming from the engine. There was evidence of both of these things in the motor, adding another clue as to what had happened to this motorcycle. With most of the engine put together and working, I began to work on the wiring. Now, traditionally, most of the electronic components like the battery and coils are located right under the seat, exposing the lower abdomen to the EMF, or electromagnetic frequency emissions, coming from these components. So with thoughts about the studies pointing to negative health effects from EMF, I sought out data about lower bowel cancers in avid motorcycle riders, meaning riders who rode more than 10,000 miles in a year. It seemed like a likely hypothesis that those dedicated riders would be in an increased risk group for cancers and other illnesses. Unfortunately, I was not able to find any studies or data corroborating this idea. But erring on the side of caution, I designed my own wiring harness that allowed me to move components like the battery, the coils, etc. from under the seat, lowering the emissions that I was exposed to. After rebuilding the engine and carbs, the electrical was a big project for such an inexperienced mechanic. I'm still working on it, honestly, ironing out the kinks, making sure it all works how it's supposed to. A few tries later of adjusting the timing of the bike and verifying the electronics with a multimeter, we were ready to rehook up the battery and try for round two of getting the engine to turn over. So, with a very small amount of fuel poured into the line, I hooked up the battery, again bypassing the starter solenoid and using the toggle to activate the coils. It only took a few revolutions from the starter and the bike roared to life. But as it ran, it was clear there was a serious problem. The rear exhaust pipe was spitting fire, and although when the bike was warmed up it sounded almost normal, the pipe was turning a glowing red. Now there's a difference between a backfire and afterfire. Backfire is when smoke comes up through the carburetor. Afterfire is when gas is ignited in the exhaust pipe, causing a loud bang. I had both happening at the same time from that rear carb. And as you can imagine, that's not good. The front cylinder was firing great, but the rear cylinder likely had leaking valves and a stretched timing chain. More to come. The Texas dirt roads worked like a sandblaster. Constant barrages of small rocks and sand pelted the bottom of the radiator and became lodged between the radiator cover and the bottom reservoir of the radiator. Over time, that wore a hole and coolant started seeping out. Coolant was replaced with water until, I imagine, the previous owner found himself out in the middle of nowhere without water. If I go fast enough, he might have thought, the engine will air cool. I believe he was not correct, or perhaps he made it back to base, but water just kept leaking out until some time later the rear cylinder overheated and the timing chain stretched. That caused afterfire and timing issues. Afterfire can be caused by a carburetor that's running lean, which could be from a clogged port or a bad seal. So I surmise the owner tried overhauling his carburetors, thinking that was the problem. But a much more ominous and serious issue was at the root of the bike sputtering. When he put the carbs back on the bike for a test, he was missing a very important washer on the rear float needle valve, causing the gas to puke into the cylinder of the motorcycle and wash the lubricating oil from the cylinder wall. The piston became hot, then cracked, then the bike started making its very sick noise. Despite having the obvious serious timing issues, I was able to take the bike for a short test ride in my driveway before conceding that I'd need to tear the top ends back apart and replace the timing chains. I'm also afraid that the valves were cooked and that I'll have to reseat them and make sure we don't have gas leaking into the exhaust pipes. The bike sounds just like I imagined, with straight pipes and velocity stacks, but it's breathing too much fire right now. Now that I've completely diagnosed the issue, I can resume working on the motor and getting everything in good working order before making this my go-to scooter for tootling in the Black Hills.